Do you want to maximize your success with NCUA? Join Mark Treichel as he shares with you the insider's view on passing your exam with flying colors. The With Flying Colors podcast is sponsored by Credit Union Exam Solutions by Mark Treichel. If you would like to work directly with the Credit Union Exam Solutions team and receive support to optimize your results with NCUA so you save time and money, visit us at marktreichel.com to find out more.
Hey everyone, this is Mark Treichel with another episode of With Flying Colors. I'm very excited. I got an extra special guest for this week's episode. I have former NCUA board chairman, Rodney Hood. Mr. Hood, how are you doing today?
I am great, Mark Treichel. It is great to be with you at Flying Colors. And what an honor to see you. I haven't seen you since you retired, sir. So what a treat to spend time with you this afternoon.
Yeah, it's nice to see you. I've watched you on video at NCUA board meetings there before you took off, and I really enjoyed working with you there at the end of my career. Now, you had two stints. You're one of the small handful of people who've served on the NCUA board twice, and maybe we can speak a little bit to how all that came about. But again, we appreciated your leadership when I was at NCUA, and I want to give you an opportunity to maybe give a little bit more of your background, right? Because I know you from NCUA, but so how did you give us a little bit of your background, how you got involved in credit unions, what led to your public service side of your career?
Well, G. Mark, you've given me quite a bit to unpack there, but first and foremost, before I dive in, I want to thank you for your steadfast leadership that you exhibited at the agency for well over 30 years. You worked together with me when I was vice chairman from 05 to 09, and then when I came back in 2019. But Mark, a lot of the success that I was able to experience came directly from you, your leadership. You managed that agency out of really an inclusive environment. You practiced a leadership style that gave everyone an equal voice. And I needed to remind you or anyone from the agency that that wasn't always the case. Perhaps when I was there over a decade ago, it was a different leadership style, but you brought grace and you brought the dignity with you to the role. But more importantly, you built a team of individuals who were there with me during my chairmanship. And also, even when I was on the board, you, through your leadership, were able to really leave a legacy through the talented people that you hired. So first, I want to thank you for working with me in partnership. And it wasn't just you, but it was those other people that you worked with along the way. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank them now publicly, because I wasn't able to say goodbye to them. There was a huge snowstorm that prevented me from thanking a lot of the folks with whom you worked when I was to have had my farewell party. So I want to now begin by thanking Larry Fazio for his steadfast. I was so thrilled that I was on the board and we made him the new executive director. Also thanking and a shout out to Wanda Brooks from the Office of Human Resources. Again, another person that we were able to promote. Rendell Jones, who functions as the chief operating officer, again, did yeoman's work there. And I want to thank him and give him a shout out. And in addition to working with a lot of the leaders I've just mentioned, I'd be remiss if I did not mention the hard work of Joy Lee, who retired a little bit before you did, but she was just a wonderful colleague and a partner who really welcomed me back to the agency with open arms and really served me well when I was vice chair, Mark, of FIPIAC. So certainly want to thank her and the regional managers. I did weekly calls with them in some instances, sometimes just to touch base. And again, Sherry Freed, phenomenal. Also having the chance to work with Keith Morton and John Cudgy. I certainly want to thank our regionals. The crux of why we exist is around examination and supervision. So I certainly want to thank Kelly Lay. I also want to thank Amanda Parkhill for the great work that she did. I know you and I are going to spend some time talking about innovation, and I can't wait for that. But the person who gave me that legal guidance that I needed for that was Kevin Taninga, who really did a yeoman's job there. Other people who worked that I want to thank are Charles Weiss for standing up that new Office of Innovation and for the access piece as well. I want to thank Natasha McAdoo for her wonderful work and the example that she's left. Malaine, as the board secretary, we could not have done a lot of the great work we did, especially in having to pivot and have our board meetings all virtually during the pandemic. So certainly want to have a shout out to her because, again, she did yeoman's work. Matt Ballores, again, with what his work was around consumer protection and really making sure that our credit unions knew that they had an advocate in him. And my goodness, Martha Ninichuk, and really in helping me create the new charters. I certainly cared about creating new charters, whether it be MDI, CDFIs, but again, the work that she was able to put forth, not only with that, but also in giving me the guidance and support that I needed when I chaired the NeighborWorks Board. And also, I want to thank my former chief of staff, Lynn Brooks, and then the gentleman who came after him, Nagy Khalid, was just amazing. And I look at people like Nagy as probably the future of the agency. And last and not least, I want to thank all of the new examiners. Mark, you may not know this, but I had an opportunity to every class of examiners since I returned to the board. I spoke with them. I either met in person or via Zoom to welcome them to talk about the bright future that they all have in the credit union industry. And I always would hold out people like you and Larry Fazio, who like them 30 years ago, you all were examiners. And I want them to know that you can have a bright, bright future within the NCUA. So the examiner folks that I got to welcome, I already know that they're doing great and abundant things. So thank you for giving me an opportunity to say a bit of a farewell, but most importantly, expressing my gratitude to the people who helped me have a successful chairmanship. And I would say an also successful time on the board, Mark. So thank you. And I now know you wish to pepper me with a few questions.
You got it. You got it. Well, and that's an all-star list of NCUA there. And by the way, Nagy, I hired Nagy as an examiner when I was a regional director. And you're right. He is an up-and-comer there at the agency. And again, a lot of great people you just thanked there. And I want to thank you for when you came back round two and I served as executive director, you created a really good environment for staff to bring you ideas, or you would pose questions to us with ideas and move the agency, move the industry forward. So I know already that the staff that you mentioned are missing you, but time goes forward, and we can talk a little bit about what the new board member can do now that Tanya Otska is on board. But so background wise, what led you to public service? I know it, but I don't, and unless somebody's read your bio particularly, but give me a little bit of background of what you did before you came to NCUA the first go round, and what made you want to come back the second time?
Really good question, Mark. Really good question. I know you wanted me to talk about that earlier. I started my career in financial services. In fact, I'm a little unique in that in high school, I was an accounting intern at a firm called Arthur Anderson. I don't know if a lot of the younger folks, but Mark and others are shaking their heads. In the good old days, there were 8 really huge public accounting firms. And I, in high school, thought I was going to go into the accounting route. So from junior year in high school through college, I interned there. And just as it was time to get ready to graduate from UNC Chapel Hill, I decided that I did not want to be a public accountant. But I thought, you know what, the skill set really trained me and prepared me well. I did do a short-term stint as a missionary, thinking I was going to become an Episcopal priest. And while I didn't sort of get that bolt of lightning, I was living in Africa. I was in Zambia and Zimbabwe. And Mark, I never felt called to be a priest, but I felt called to help people. So I did what naturally happens. I went into banking and finance. So I went into financial services after having the stints again in Africa and at Arthur Anderson, but I focused on commercial lending. I was a banker where I was able to help small businesses reach their potential. I was able to do community development, economic development. I focused as a CRA officer. So in my career, I've worked with 3 Wall Street firms over the course of my nearly 3 decades, but all of my career in financial services has always been around helping the least amongst us, as the scriptures call us to do. And in fact, even my priest said first, Rodney, it's only in the movies that the person has the bolt of lightning that tells them that they're to be a priest. And then secondly, he wanted me to know that I needed to wear the clerical collar to effectuate change in communities in need. So in fact, he applauded me for the fact that I was able to do even greater good in financial services, because again, I'm helping marginalized communities, low to moderate income communities, the tribal lands, rural, justice involved, differently abled. So all of the people that I could perhaps help as a clerical staff member, I could also help in financial services. So with my ecclesiastic interest, I think it comes with a bit of volunteerism and public service. So I will tell you, I was sitting in my office the first time the Bush administration called, and they invited me to join the administration. And I don't advise anyone to do this when the White House calls you. I hung up the phone because I thought it was a joke. So then they called back and they asked if I would want to join the administration. And Mark, my first political appointment was not at NCUA. I was the deputy administrator of housing at USDA Rural Development. So I oversaw like a $40 billion housing portfolio, which that was a lot of money in 2004, looking at single family and multifamily housing in rural America. And the crux of what that job was for me to travel around the country and working with banks and credit unions to get them to see the need and the importance of using the loan guarantee product. So I, as having been a commercial lender, always cared about safety and soundness. We always love loan guarantees. When you work either as a regulator or as a banker or a credit union executive, we like what we would call it as an abundance of caution. So I was really selling and promoting the USDA Rural Development Insurance products to banks and credit unions. And year into that, there was an opening on the NCUA board. I met a young man who's no longer with us today. He sadly passed away, but his name was Nick Owens. Nick worked at NCUA. He met me at just a regular restaurant and started talking about the work that I was already doing in the administration. He said, "Hey, the White House just let us know that we need someone to join the board. Why don't I give them your name?" First of all, Nick had to tell me what NCUA was. So I had worked in financial services, but I had never really become part of the credit union world and or anything like that. So once I learned about NCUA and how it was a peer of all the other financial regulators, I jumped at the opportunity. And the next thing you know, you have FBI agents going through your personal history and you get confirmed and taking that oath of office and joining the agency, Mark. When you were there, I was there from 2005 to 2009. You may recall that I cared a lot then about enterprise risk management, working on some of the tenets of looking at risk management holistically, getting it away from being siloed and really getting folks around the credit union movement and also within NCUA to look at some of the stances that it takes to really have an effective tool, as was promulgated by the Treadway Commission and all the folks from Pricewaterhouse, who really played a leading role in creating today's ERM landscape. So I was really happy to champion a number of those enterprise risk management summits, which you participated in. But I'm so thrilled that some almost 20 years later, the ERM model still exists. NCUA is still continuing to fine tune and tweak the ERM mindset. So I was able to be vice chair during the dark days of the recession, but we were able to keep the credit union system safe and sound. We've always had great board members, and I'll never forget that, the agility and the resilience that the credit unions showed, and it's still paying a dividend today. So I left NCUA in 2009, and that's when I went to a Wall Street firm where I was there for a decade. And then, Mark, in 2019, White House calls again under President Trump. I'm pleased to tell you, I didn't hang up the phone that time when the White House said they were calling to invite me to join, but Mark, I don't know if any of your friends or anyone at the agency knows this, but when the White House called me in 2019, they did not ask me to go return to NCUA. They wanted me to head up CFPB. They said, "We would like some of your background and your abilities. Would you mind taking over the CFPB?" And I said, "I don't feel called in that direction. I certainly believe in consumer protection and compliance, but I think that there are thousands of people out there who probably care about that issue more than I don't want to rob them of that opportunity. So maybe you should talk to some of them." So they called back 3 days later, and that's when they said, "We'd love for you to return to NCUA as its 11th chairman." So that is what brought me back. And I came back because, as I mentioned, I enjoyed introducing ERM tenets to the credit union community. I enjoyed hosting the roundtables around the country. But we had that pesky global recession that sort of thwarted a lot of efforts there. And I felt that I had unfinished business. I still wanted to be a part of the credit union community. I still wanted to continue to give them a regulatory agenda of one of empowerment and flexibility where they could continue to serve their hardworking members. So I returned because I wanted to continue the work that began nearly a decade prior and a chance to really continue to just learn more about the industry. And I think it's safe to say, because I'd been at the agency before, I was able to hit the ground running. And that's why we were able to see a number of initiatives, such as subordinated debt, such as the service facility rules, such as the Office of Innovation, all those things that, again, came through your leadership because you were able to help me work with the appropriate staff members to do all the due diligence. But again, I returned because I felt there was unfinished business. And I hope that those of you who now are following what was able to take place, I hope you agree that we were able to accomplish a lot in a very short time.
That's a fact. And hitting the ground running, there's a definite value when someone comes back to serve on the NCUA board the second time. It doesn't take X amount of months or time for the board member to understand the nuances of credit unions, understand the trade associations, more importantly, understand how the building works, how NCUA works. You can hit the ground running and start being effective on day one, and you certainly were. And also, so you mentioned enterprise risk management. You're introducing that and having those discussions at the time that ERM was starting to develop around the world, raised the bar in credit unions. And then I believe you also established or allowed us to establish the ERM Risk Council within NCUA during your chairman.
Exactly. You did it beautifully. And that came to me as a result of Susan Bice. Remember, she was one of the Federal Reserve governors. And as I was assuming the vice chairmanship, I got to know all of my peer regulators, and she mentioned that was something that credit unions and banks alike should all be mindful of. So it was because of her guidance on that. And that's why she was my first ever keynote speaker when I launched the NCUA ERM Risk Summit Series. We did it there at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and we had a packed house, and it worked out really well. But again, it was you and your leadership. And you know who also helped me with that? Owen Cole, who also served as my temporary chief of staff before Linwood Brooks. And Owen, when he was running capital markets, he did a great job in helping me with speakers and looking at some of the other implications of what happens when you don't have a good ERM strategy. So I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Owen and also Mark. All the things that we were able to do when you were there and when I was there would not have been possible without the support of Fred Haynes from IT. Good luck doing anything without a good IT professional.
I tell you what, you got that right. Fred just retired too, I heard. He recently, or he's about to, or he just did. One of those two.
He's announced it. I think he has a few days left. But again,
very good.
Things that we could do around any of this would have been possible without it. But yeah, the ERM framework still lives on today. And again, as I always tell folks, it's not about risk avoidance, but it's about risk management and risk mitigation. Embracing it head on.
Very good. Very well said. Very well said. So you mentioned in the Office of Financial Technology and Access, you were a champion for that. You mentioned Charles Vice, I believe, who now is in charge of who you brought in. Explain a little bit about why you were so passionate about bringing that office to NCUA. What maybe you think the credit unions can expect to see coming from that arena and that office in the future?
Really good question. So I mentioned that I spent a decade working for a Wall Street firm, which actually now is, I think, the largest bank in the United States. And when you had a bank of that scale, looking at fintech as how do we serve clients? How do we get better and more nimble through the use of technology? I sat in a lot of those meetings. I was in a lot of the outreach sessions with Silicon Valley social entrepreneurs. And Mark, what happened, I mentioned I wanted to come back to the agency because I thought there was some unfinished business. I wasn't hearing credit union leaders. I wasn't hearing credit union executives talk about fintech. I think if anything, at that point in time, 2019, people were still looking at fintech as the boogeyman, but yet you have large Wall Street firms looking at fintech as that accelerant, as that ability for them to grow and grow deeper with their clients or in our parlance members. So I recognized that, hey, there's a bit of a disconnect. And I like to look at myself as someone who's trying to think about not what's happening next week, but what's happening next year, or next decade. And I thought there was a bit of a gap that we weren't seeing credit unions readily embrace a lot of the tools by way of partnerships with fintechs and things of that nature. So that's why I recognized that NCUA needed to have an office of innovation so that they could be really up to date with what are the things that the 138 million members of credit unions today are using, faster bill pay, remote deposit capture. What about the other tools that it's going to take around data aggregation, data analytics to go deeper with the member relationship? So I wanted to have an environment, and I guess it's kind of selfish. I wanted to have an environment that credit unions were going to thrive and succeed. I'd look at fintechs where I think before the pandemic, we thought of it as a shiny tool or as a luxury. Post-pandemic, I think it's a strategic imperative. unless fintechs and credit unions work together in partnership, will we even have a credit union industry to regulate? So I looked at it as a tool that they needed, not just to survive, but to also meet the needs of their members. And I was very proud of the fact that we were very thoughtful and very results oriented. All of the other financial regulators in DC, they have fintech offices, the FDIC, the OCC, Federal Reserve, CFPB, but none of them have one similar to the NCUA Office of Financial Technology and Access. A lot of the other regulatory fintechs, they exist in theory. They do some really good work, but I think they exist more for those internal regulatory bodies. The NCUA goal for me, when I created it with the help of Todd Harper and Cal Heltman, I did not do any of these activities unilaterally. So I want to thank Chairman Harper for his imprimatur and moving the ball forward. NCUA is more external facing. There's a fintech discussion series that I launched. So Mark, every other week, Charles Weiss, when he was hired for that job, he's continuing with that tradition, bringing out a different fintech to talk to the agency. That's the examiners, that's the folks in risk, compliance, the regions. So for them to know, what are these fintechs all doing so that when that credit union that's using that fintech is examined, there's a familiarity. That means that they know that fintech knows about compliance, RESPA, Reg B, Reg E. They know about all the other things that one needs to know to operate in a safe and sound and secure environment. So the fintech discussion series is important. None of the other regulators are doing that. But the fact that I think Charles is looking at doing a tech sprint where you're going to have social entrepreneurs and fintechs solving an issue that perhaps NCUA finds relevant. Maybe it's modernizing the call report. Maybe it's coming up with some augmentation to the merit system, which, by the way, I believed in merit from day one. So I certainly want to thank Kelly Lay and Amanda for all the work that they did, or Amber for the work they did in merit.
That's right.
As I talk about innovation for credit unions, I also believe that there needs to be reg tech. So I'm not just out about preaching credit unions embrace it. NCUA needs to embrace it as well. And I think you all who have gone through the merit program, and that's the modern examination risk identification tool, replaces that integrated ARRI system. I think you're seeing that NCUA is being a forward-thinking, positive body as it relates to technology. And I think the main thing you all about that office, I wanted to signal to the industry that NCUA is not looking away from technology, but by creating that office, it means that we want the credit unions to know that it is permissible, provided they're doing their third-party due diligence, they're doing the vetting, and as long as they're really being strategic, I wanted folks to know that they can come to us. I know the agency has already issued guidance on digital assets, distributed ledger technology. There was an interagency request for information on how banks and credit unions are using technology to help with compliance, whether it be BSA and AML. So the whole point in a nutshell, technology is not going anywhere. We need to embrace it head on. I think early days, it was presented as the boogeyman. I think now we're seeing use cases where member value is enhanced. Credit union scores in the Gallup polls are going up now marginally because they are embracing the tools that the 138 million members that use these credit unions rely on every day. So I think that fintech has a bright future, and I'm glad that we have someone with the expertise of Charles Weiss, having been the state regulator for Kentucky for banks and credit unions, having worked with another entity. So it's a bright, bright future ahead.
No, that's great. And you think about the blockchain letter that you mentioned, which encourages the exploration of the fintech side of things. And when that came out in the whole discussion of fintech over the last several years with your leadership, et cetera, and now we're talking about artificial intelligence, right? You can't get away from conversations relative to that. And if you don't have the foundation of the other learning tools in fintech, where does that position you for how AI is going to influence banking and influence credit unions and your service centers and your call centers and all that? So it's great that you put that office in place and that Charles is continuing those important conversations and leadership there. So I'll pivot now to another one of your passions, which is financial inclusion. You talked about it a little bit, the importance of serving people of modest means, and it was such a priority for you at NCUA. Can you share a little bit of the progress? You touched on it a little bit, the progress that was made in this arena and maybe where you'd like to see things go relative to financial inclusion in credit unions and in general?
Oh, in general, exactly. First of all, as you've all heard me say, you can't have a meeting with Rodney Hood without my saying financial inclusion is the civil rights issue of our generation. And I say that repeatedly because we still have 40% of American households unable to obtain $400 in the midst of an emergency. We still have 26 million households that are credit invisible. And then we have another 74 million who may have a modicum of a credit score, but not enough to really get them into the financial mainstream where they're getting a paper. So when you have numbers of that magnitude, it means that banks and credit unions need to unite to find ways to bring these individuals into the financial mainstream. Because if we don't, who's waiting on the wings and on the periphery? It's those pernicious and predatory payday lenders. They're the ones who are providing those emergency loans. So that is why I am so delighted that when we were looking at the Office of Financial Technology, I was very intentional about wanting to marry that with Access. And that is the group that Natasha McAdoo is running, using artificial learning, using fintechs to bolster greater financial inclusion. And that is how the bank and credit unions can use the data analytics to go deeper into the loan decisioning process, how they're able to really still use cash flow analysis and other core data in terms of how folks are paying their bills. Maybe they're doing money advances and money orders, but they're still able to have some modicum of an ability to look at the ability to repay. Those are the things that I'm seeing that credit unions are now using some of those tools. Natasha has been a wonderful resource for the I-10 lending, which happens in some of the border states where we're having folks who are coming in and able to help them get a legitimate access to financial services through those information that they're providing through the I-10 loan product or the account opening, I should say. Also, the fact that credit unions are doing financial counseling. In fact, I'm here today in South Carolina getting ready to give a speech to a credit union's annual meeting, Mark. They're going to have their 65th annual meeting. This is a credit union that's a little shy of $2 billion in assets. And I'm going to talk about how they are partnering with high schools, where if you have this credit union's credit card or debit card, you can have a certain high school partner with you. And that means that the high school gets proceeds from that interchange fee. So they've already raised almost $500,000 over the past year. And those high schools get to use it for whatever the needs are. There are so many funding gaps and funding shortages, but a lot of the schools are using it to teach financial literacy and financial education. Who other than credit unions would ever be that innovative when it comes to giving resources back? So credit unions are stepping up to the plate. There's another credit union that I visited in Delaware where that individual had a member who had a 540 FICO score, but she couldn't get any other credit because she was saddled with debt from payday lenders. So they were able to get her a financial coach. But now, a year and a half later, she's 740, a paper for a mortgage. So credit unions are being innovative. So I really want to unleash a lot of innovation because credit unions grew out of adversity. They grew during the times of the Depression. So I think they know what it's like to really thrive in times of difficulty. And I'm seeing credit unions now looking at financial inclusion as access, as that strategic imperative. So I just hope that NCUA, through the Office of Financial Innovation and Access, continues to unleash it, continues to showcase it. And I, for one, am just proud of the work that credit unions are doing in this space. And I can't wait to hear more stories. But yeah, again, I'm happy to talk about it.
Yeah, that's exciting. I love those stories about individuals, the anecdotal stories of people being helped, but also those large dollars going to high schools. Certainly funding at high schools, funding in a lot of areas is difficult. So if credit unions can make a difference at a high school, they're making a difference in the future of that community. That's fantastic. So I was going to ask a question about technology, another question about technology, but we tiptoed into that. So I'm going to jump to, so you're gone. Now we have a new board member taking your place, Tanya Odzka, who is now on the NCUA board. And we talked about cryptocurrency. I know cybersecurity is always a risk. There's NCUA's priority list and things like that. But if you were to sit down and give any new board member at NCUA, but right now it's turned to be the new board member, what kind of advice would you offer to a new person serving on the NCUA board in this environment?
First of all, I want to congratulate Tanya on her confirmation. She is just a gracious and delightful young professional. She was very kind in coming to my farewell celebration. I was able to have a public-facing farewell, so I got a chance to spend a little bit of time with her. And I left her a note and just encouraging her to just do a number of things. And my encouragement to her that I can share publicly is visit the credit unions when you get an opportunity. Get to know them and what are their issues. I think it always behooves the NCUA board members to sometimes, Mark, leave 1775 Duke Street to hear what's going on in Kentucky or South Dakota, because you get to really realize what will be the impact of your regulation on their operations and their ability to serve their member owners. I would also encourage Tanya, and in fact, a lot of the advice that I would give her, I would give also to some of the staff members, and that is continue to read. You've talked about cybersecurity. You've talked about digital assets. These are emerging technologies. Every day, we are reading about new tools and new platforms. So continue to study. I wake up most mornings at 6 o'clock, and after doing my devotion, I'm reading about what's going on with technology in Singapore, what's going on in Hong Kong, what's going on also in the UK. When I was with the agency, I spent a lot of time meeting with the Bank of England and the Financial Conduct Authority. I am voraciously reading, what are the new technologies? What are these new risk entrants into our system? And how do we look at mitigating that risk? As much as we think about digital assets, are they following BSA? What are we doing around KYC models? You, Mark, recall that there were a number of outflows from credit unions into digital wallets. We didn't quite know, is it going into Bitcoin or Doge or what, any of the other thousands of cryptocurrencies that are out there. But I would encourage anyone on the NCUA board or even on the NCUA staff, continue to learn, read. I do podcasts every day, which is educational, like the Mark Trykle podcast. So continuing the learning. In fact, Mark, you may have already retired by then, but I took an in-depth fintech course at one of the Ivy League schools to really help me get the foundational skills around understanding fintechs and how it operates. I think one of the things that I would encourage Tanya and others to do as well is let's look at what's going on around the general data protection rules that emanated from Brussels. I do think the United States and some pockets are all looking at national data privacy rules. I know Texas and California and others are looking at during their own rulemakings around data privacy. And it's even a little bit more onerous than what originated in the EU. So that may mean that perhaps FIFIAC and our credit union, the bank regulators and NCUA need to look at, will there be national privacy and data standards for the U.S. before we have this balkanization of other states, again, like Texas and California are doing their own. So I would just say, voracious reader, podcast. I also, through LinkedIn, I have a vast network of acquaintances there. And what I like is, if I see someone that's an industry expert, I call them up or I email them and let them know that, hey, do you have 30 minutes to talk about what are some of your discoveries? Before we conclude this segment, there is a new digital currency off the island of Honduras. There is a group there that has gotten special permission to create a whole new central bank currency that is going to stand alone. It's not going to have the American dollar as its backstop of sorts. It is a new currency using everything from digital tokens to vaulting the deposits and things of that nature, that they're doing this as a test. Well, I'm really interested in what's this going to pretend for the future of the economy. So I know what may sound odd today, they're thinking, what? Someone's creating a new island and gotten permission. It's now going to be all digital-based currency. You know what? We probably all thought the ride-sharing apps of yesteryear were kind of odd as well. So it just means that some of the things that may strike you as odd today may be worth studying. So again, I am making sure that I'm trying to stay as current as possible.
I love the idea and the recommendation to keep reading. It reminds me of two different quotes. One was, well, one concept is Stephen Covey, continuing to sharpen the saw, right? Continuing to learn. Mm-hmm. But it also reminds me of a quote that goes something like, the man who doesn't read isn't any different than the man who can't.
Exactly.
And if you don't, if it's all out there and it's all available, particularly now with the internet and all the information. So that's a fantastic recommendation. To a board member, to anybody, continue to learn and read. So we've talked a lot about fintech. Is there anything else you'd like to add relative to what on the horizon for financial institutions the next 5-10 years?
Yes, I think on the horizon as it relates to financial institutions, I think we're going to continue to see some strong use cases. As I mentioned earlier, I think that the news media was presenting AI and some of these tools as the boogeyman that was out to wreak havoc. And I do think there's some bad actors, but that goes back to having a strong defense posture. I think we're going to see artificial intelligence really helping credit unions really go deeper in understanding their members' needs. And I know we keep thinking about jobs that are going to be replaced. No, the jobs are going to be really realigned. It means that you're going to use the machine learning and artificial intelligence to do those mundane things that who really wants to spend time with CTRs, currency transaction reports, and suspicious activity reports. Let's use technology. So then that technician can then use the more technical skills so they can bring in that judgment piece. And I think we're going to see that with member engagement. I love the fact that credit unions of the future, as they use these platforms, they're going to be able to not just meet the needs of their members, but they're going to be able to anticipate them. They're going to be able to look at buying trends and say, oh, perhaps we need to give this person a pre-approved mortgage tool for a home equity, because it seems like they're getting a lot of things at Home Depot, but maybe let's give them a line of credit. How do we use those tools to go deeper and to really delight the members? I think we're going to continue to see an uptick in members loving the credit unions. I think we're going to see also, Mark, that technology, I think it's going to help credit unions do cross-sell. I've never really seen a number of credit unions looking at how do you really provide opportunities for the members to use other services within your credit union, whether it be the checking account, the savings account, the credit card. Are you using some retirement services, the line of credit? Really, how do you really have that full-on relationship with the credit union? I think we talk about the 138 million members, but some of those 138 million still may have other financial service accounts. How do you really get that deeper engagement? I think the technology is going to play a part there. I think the future, as it relates, again, is going to be use cases around member engagement, high customer satisfaction scores, or in our case, member satisfaction, high trust scores. Credit unions have always led all the other financial services providers in terms of their high engagement for trust. And I think we're going to continue to see more of that because, again, that member engagement, again, that credit union sales rep or that loan officer, they now have time to better understand the needs of that member in real time. And another area that I would say, if I were to predict, I think we're going to see more credit unions also getting more involved with business lending. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about my prediction for the future, but I will save that for later. But I do think they're going to use a lot of these tools to see which of their members are also engaged with member businesses.
Yes, all great points on where we're heading in the future. A couple things, AI, and there's a lot of fear about AI out there right now, just like you said, and linking that to continual learning and podcasts. There's a podcast out there, you may be aware of it, called Oddlots. It's hosted by a couple of folks from Bloomberg. And it's one of my favorite podcasts. They talk a lot about economics and they look at it in different lights, but they just had every Monday they have an episode and they had an economist who came on talking about how he really thinks that AI is going to be very positive for the middle class and is going to help grow the middle class. I would encourage you to listen to it. I'd encourage anybody to give Oddlots a try. But also the other point I want to highlight there is you talked about member satisfaction and customer satisfaction and how that can and oftentimes is the credit union difference. I don't know about you, but it seems like sometimes customer service today isn't as good in general, just not talking credit unions, just in general in the world. It's not as good as today as it might have been pre-pandemic or 10 years ago. But when I do get really good customer service, I'm like wowed more than I ever was. And I make sure I point out to them how excited I am to be able to work with that individual. And when credit unions can do that, anybody can do that, whether it's the person at the restaurant, it really can be the differentiation point today.
It really is. And again, that is how credit unions are going to be able to differentiate themselves from banks in the days to come. Think about it. All things being equal, other than charter types, I mean, banks and credit unions are offering loans. They're offering deposit accounts. The one thing that credit unions have, though, is that relationship, that service commitment, that fidelity to really seeing that member through thick and thin, which is why I was so proud of the fact that over the pandemic, credit unions did not abandon their members, but they did debt forgiveness, loan modifications, interest rate reductions, and credit unions, because of that, and again, they grew during the Depression, that people helping people eat those continues to manifest itself. And I think that as credit unions now can, I think, avail themselves of these tools, they're going to really have time to get back to the basis of that engagement. But I think that credit unions, it's going to be incumbent upon them to differentiate themselves from the bank, because if they don't do, then why do we need a separate regulator? Why do they need to have all the other flexibilities that they enjoy? So I want them to continue to make that member engagement piece, that helping piece, that needs to continue to be front and center. Otherwise, why have the separation? And I think credit unions, if they tell their story, they can do that. I want to give you a quick story from last night. So the credit union that I'm about to speak at their 65th annual meeting in a few hours this evening, they do what's called a spot campaign. So that means if they're around the community and they'll just randomly ask people, do you have a credit union account with my credit union? And if the person says yes, they have to show their debit or credit card, and that senior executive gives them $100 on the spot. It's called a spot award. So anyway, so I've never seen that done before. So you want to get a group of people in a restaurant excited. So everyone is like, oh my gosh, what's this credit union? And anyway, so I shared that story with the hotel where I'm staying here. And of course, the staff kind of thought that I worked for this credit. It's like, no, I'm just telling you the story. I don't carry $100 bills to do spot awards. But again, that creates excitement. That creates, it's a marketing tool. But again, I love seeing the things that credit unions are doing that differentiate themselves from the other financial services providers. And those, that's just one example of member excitement.
Very good. Very good. So we've talked a lot about credit unions. We've talked a lot about your journey to credit unions and time at NCUA. And we had a little bit of pre-chat, and I know a little bit about what you're doing. And you mentioned LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn a lot, and I've seen you, that you're now serving on a couple of boards of directors on LinkedIn that you've announced there. Let's speak a little bit about that process, what you're doing there, and then everything else you're doing now that you've left NCUA from a career perspective.
It's hard to believe that it's been almost, 7 weeks or so now that I said goodbye to the agency and whatnot. And I not only left the board seat and chairmanship of NCUA, but I also retired from being chairman of NeighborWorks America. So in that short time, because of the passion that you all know that I've had for financial technology, it's natural that a lot of the fintechs that I got to meet when I was at the agency, I got a chance to see their businesses continue to grow and evolve and reach a modicum of maturity. And many of them have asked that I advise them as an independent director. There are some venture capital firms, Marcus, so it's not the fintechs directly invited me to join their boards. It's the venture capital firms that have invested millions or so in dollars in these entities, and they want to have someone with my expertise around corporate governance, knowledge of consumer protection and compliance, and also regulatory affairs. So I've been asked to join a few fintech boards where I'm giving them guidance on how to navigate the regulatory regime in Washington. How do they understand what takes place? Because, Mark, when you have a fintech, they just have an idea and a tool. They don't realize that their tool has to go through a number of regulatory hurdles. So how do they understand Washington 101? So I'm excited about being an advisor where they are gracious in providing compensation and other sort of things that go with being a board member of some of these venture capital-based firms. The one thing I want you all to know that as I join some of these boards, I'm only joining boards of entities that align with my mission and my purpose. If it is a fintech that doesn't adhere to what I believe is the credit union ethos of people helping people, I've said no. I've said yes to maybe 3 boards, but you all don't know I've said no to 100. If they don't align, if they're just looking to come into a credit union because they want a mass market, I'm like, no, what's your fidelity to the ethos? What's your fidelity to them wanting to serve their members and especially helping people of modest means? So I have a litmus test, as I do for anything. It is, does it align with my purpose, my passion, and my mission? And the boards that I've served on to date are doing just that. I'm also doing quite a bit of speaking engagements. I probably have about 15 speaking engagements where credit union leagues and credit unions are either inviting me as a paid speaker to come and talk about issues of the day, lessons learned from NCUA, and things of that nature. So between board service and public speaking events, been staying pretty busy. It's only been about 6 weeks. There are a number of things that are brewing on the horizon regarding what I would call full time. But full time in today's world is a little different, but there will be another thing that I hope to announce soon. Maybe in a year when we get together, Mark, we can talk about the new endeavor that is on the horizon of being announced. But for right now, I'm passionate about making a difference. Public service really prepared me with a lot of the relationships that I've cultivated. The World Council, I still stay engaged. I was at the recent GAC where I was able to speak on a financial inclusion panel. I've been invited to meet with some of the African regulators that are no stranger to NCUA. I know they've met with the agency on numerous occasions. So I will continue to be a part of this industry because it aligns with my ecclesiastical interests.
That's fantastic news for the industry, the credit unions, NCUA, the fintechs. I'm excited that you're staying involved in all this because it does match so well with your passions and your core beliefs. And it's funny, I'm enjoying this hour. I got a smile on my face because your passion, your energy, your enthusiasm, when you walk into a room and you start talking, you stir people's thoughts and ideas just because you're such a positive person and you add so much to what's happening in that room. And I know NCUA is going to miss that. It's a nice reminder for me to be able to spend an hour with you here today. And now, if there was a question I should have asked that I didn't ask yet, Chairman Hood, what would that be as we wrap this up here today?
I think if there's a question, what do I see the future landscape as it relates to credit unions 3, 5, 7 years from today? And I know I touched on a little bit of this. I think the landscape is bright and bold as it relates to credit unions, not only embracing technology. I mentioned the business lending. As I travel and I'm here in a rural area, and I've noticed that there are a number of banks that have left this local area and these local Main Street merchants. In fact, I just walked down this local Main Street and there are a lot of empty buildings. And I think credit unions are going to be uniquely positioned to acquire some of those banks and assume the liabilities that are leaving these rural areas. So I do think we're going to continue to see credit unions, one, able to grow and take advantage of what could be perceived as financial deserts. I think credit unions are uniquely positioned to come into these markets and continue to invest in serving their members, lest they then be served by predatory payday lenders. So I'm seeing that we're going to see more credit unions able to be in that arena. And again, they're not nefariously buying banks, but they're leaving the market. I know that gets into a lot of contention when people think that banks are getting calls from credit unions with bags of cash. No, it's that they are fleeing these markets. So I do think we're going to see more of that on the horizon as regional banks and money center banks have to navigate not only CECL, but also the Basel III risk capital regime. So I do think that's going to open up opportunities for credit unions to really continue to grow. In so doing, I think credit unions are going to be more of those providers of small business, or in our parlance, member business loans. Credit unions during the PPP program originated 310,000 paycheck protection loan products. And I think that was a good foray into credit unions being able to really provide business lending, helping those American businesses have access to affordable capital. I think we're going to see more of that. And as banks are being sold or purchased by credit unions, I think the credit unions are going to have that expertise. Now, I don't want to encourage credit unions to acquire banks thinking that they're going to learn about commercial lending overnight. It does require some technical skills and proficiencies. But the thing is, I think credit unions are going to fill that void that is going to be left as banks leave Main Street and some of those market opportunities. So credit unions, I want you to be aware of those opportunities, making sure that you are fine-tuning your risk management profile so that you can really harness the needs that are going to come from the business lenders, business owners, and meaning not just offering the lowest loan product, but are you offering checkbox loan management services, treasury management services, all the things that business owner needs to be really satisfied by the credit union. So I do think that's going to be a trend that we're going to see more of in the years to come. Another area, you know, Mark, we didn't talk about this, but I was a proponent for cannabis banking and its legalization because that is an underserved market. I cared a lot about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I looked very expansively at diversity, equity, and inclusion. Yes, it's minorities, ethnicity, but it's also low to mod. It's also tribal, rural, differently able, and cannabis businesses. The cannabis businesses, you all, it's legal in 39 states, but yet in some instances, it's still considered a taboo to bank them when it's legal in 39 states. So The 200 credit unions that are engaged now in legally serving the cannabis businesses through providing them with a tool for deposits, I think that we're going to see more of that tool, more credit unions embracing the cannabis banking as Congress, I hope, passes the Safe Banking Act. I tell folks it's not a matter of if, but now when. I think that we are starting to see bipartisan support with it. In fact, I just did an interview with one of the cannabis magazines around the legalization and the compliance association, the compliance activities. And to date, NCUA has never closed down a credit union that is following the FinCEN and BSA guidance that are legally operating in the business. So I do think that the taboo is being removed. The 200 so credit unions are engaged in it now. And I do think that there's a bright opportunity, but I do recognize folks are waiting for Congress to act. But I do think that's another emerging tool that we're going to see credit unions taking advantage of. So I would say cannabis banking and member business lending are those two things that will continue to sort of equip credit unions for future and long-term success.
Great point. I agree wholeheartedly on both. You summarized that fantastic. Member business lending is indeed the future. And it's a matter of but on cannabis banking for sure. And it's great that credit unions are going into that. Hopefully Congress comes around and it can be legal everywhere so that the Safe Bank Act can be passed would be a great step towards that. Chairman Hood, if someone's listening to this and they're a credit union, they're going, you know what, I've got my annual meeting coming up or we're starting to schedule for our next annual meeting and they want to reach out to you and see how you might be able to help them or just have a conversation with you. What's the best way for someone to get in touch with you?
A number of ways, Mark. First and foremost, LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn because it is that very professional network. So Rodney E. Hood at LinkedIn, you'll see my smiling picture and I really look forward to a dialogue there. Or don't laugh, but I still am Rodney Hood at AOL.com. And I've had it for so many years now, probably since AOL was created. And that's Rodney, R-O-D-N-E-Y, Hood, H-O-O-D, at AOL.com. No dots necessary. We weren't doing dots then. It was just our names. So those are two things. But LinkedIn, I try to respond to every one of those requests. And again, I'm enjoying the strategic sessions where I've been speaking. I've been enjoying like the keynote that I'm going to give tonight, where I'm going to talk about the credit union ethos. And I just look forward to continued engagement. And Mark, thank you for your time, your leadership. I know you've built a very successful consulting business, and that's because of your great track record there at the agency. You've surrounded yourself with leaders. And I know in the credit union industry, there are a lot of folks who want to provide credit union solutions. And you are doing more than that because you know the industry so well and intimately because of your work as being an examiner and being the head of a region and being the executive director. So I don't know if there's anyone else in the business who has your track record, your perspicacity, and the ability that you have to really work on behalf of the credit unions that you are partnering with. So I just see it. When I go to events and people tell me that they've worked with you, so you are using real world best practices. And most importantly, I don't know of any of the other consultants who really have embraced technology the way you have. So you're able to help them navigate a digital format or a digital only existence. And none of the others, I think many of the others are tethered to maybe things that may have been popular 20 or 30 years ago. You are current, Mark, and that shows that you are listening, just as we were all seeing, continue learning, continue outreach and education. Call the industry experts. You're doing just that. And that's what's made you so successful and what separates you from the others. So that's why I applaud you and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you so much, Chairman Hood. I really want to thank you for your time. Your energy, it lights me up. It fills me up. And I know it is a great episode. I'm looking forward to getting out there so people can listen to it. And thank you so much for your time.
You are welcome. Thank you for having me.
You bet. And listeners, I want to thank you for listening. I hope you'll listen again soon. This is Mark Treichel signing off with Flying Colors.
Thank you. thank you for joining us on this episode of With Flying Colors. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app to hear future episodes where subject matter experts of all varieties will provide tips on how to achieve success with NCUA. If you would like to learn more about how we assist credit unions, check out our services at marktreichel.com.